Radical Self-Acceptance, Session 4, The Field of Belonging. The path of radical acceptance is really a path of relationship. And thus far in these talks, we've explored how to establish the grounds of relating in a friendly way when our habit is to push away so much of our life. And then in the last talk, how to deepen that relationship so that we really become intimate. We really connect fully with the life that's within us. In this last talk, which I've called Field of Belonging, we'll be exploring how the radical acceptance that we practice can bring us to a profound sense of belonging to our world. Now, I opened the talks with the words of the Zen master Dogen, and I'd like to revisit that. To be in harmony with the oneness of life is to be without anxiety about imperfection. Another way of saying this is that when we give up all resistance and striving to be perfect, we can touch a very great and natural peace. This acceptance and peace doesn't come around because we finally realize that this separate self is not all that bad, or even that we're more good than bad. This radical acceptance is possible as we realize that the painful ways of conditioning, what I've called imperfection, the shame, the reactivity, the guilt, the blame that we've considered as self, do not define our being. As we realize our belonging to the ocean of awareness, there is room for these waves. And it's in that largeness of our being, of our love, that we're able to include but not be entrapped in a sense of deficiency or fear. Once again, the words of Rumi. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. Much of meditation describes our relationship with inner experience, embracing the rejected parts of our inner life with open, loving awareness. Yet the sense of who we are is dependent on, is generated and maintained through our relationships with significant others, with all beings. To be enlightened is to be intimate with all things, writes Zen Master Dogen. It's a belonging to this whole world. Now, this understanding of interdependence is right at the heart of the Buddhist teachings. There's a wonderful image. It's the jeweled net of Indra. And it's an image of a web, and at every intersection of the strands of this web are jewels. And each jewel reflects and illuminates every other jewel. It represents this truth that we can't describe or identify ourselves without including the rest of the universe, this universe that creates our being and mirrors our being. You can sense it, that this very moment's experience arises out of infinite factors, including what you've eaten today, where the moon is in its cycle, and responses your parents had to each other on the day that they met, the responses your parents gave to you when you were proud or when you were afraid. So we can't separate out the world from our experience of self. And the wounds that keep us feeling in some way defective and separate occurred primarily in interpersonal relationships, occurred when we were in some way neglected or not seen. So our healing, relaxing about imperfection, remembering love, also occurs in the context of these human relationships. What this means is we need to rediscover the truth of our belonging to this web of life and with actual fellow beings. During the first 2 decades of this century, there was a children's clinic in Germany, and a doctor, Dr. Talbot, was renowned for having uncommon success in dealing with sick children. For many years, as he made his rounds, he would be followed from ward to ward by groups of interns that were seeking new ways of handling children's diseases. And this is a story from one such intern. Many times we would come across a child for whom everything had failed. For some reason, the child was hopelessly wasting away. When this would happen, Dr. Talbot would take the child's chart and scrawl some indecipherable prescription. In most of the cases, the magic formula took effect and the child began to prosper. My curiosity was aroused, and I wondered if the famous doctor had developed some new type of wonder drug. One day, after rounds, I returned to the ward and tried to decipher Dr. Talbot's scrawl. I had no luck, and so I turned to the head nurse and asked her what the prescription was. "Old Anna," she said. Then she pointed to a grandmotherly woman seated in a large rocker with a baby on her lap. "She has had more success than all the doctors and nurses in this institution combined." While solitary meditation, training to attend to our inner experience, is necessary, it is not sufficient for healing. Our meditations also need to be explicitly engaged with our world. There's sometimes a misunderstanding about spiritual awakening, that in some way we're removed and off in a cave and doing it on our own. And yet when we really look closely in our lives, where's the pain? Where's the love? The pain was created when belonging was severed with others, when someone didn't respond to our cry, when someone turned their back. The healing happens when we can feel embraced. Just as these little children didn't respond to any standard medical treatment, the one thing that was powerful enough was the holding and love of a motherly being. Well, we each need that. We've probably explored all sorts of different paths within the broader spiritual path, and yet to not go deeply into the place that's really the source of healing, this connecting, is to bypass the most important part of the path. It's through our loving relationships, therapeutic relationships, spiritual community, the natural world, that we discover and fully live out the sense of belonging. And this is what allows us to continue to open to the life within. I've seen many, many people that have come a long way on the path, learn to get calm, get quiet, be with a certain amount of their inner life, but hit a wall. And this wall was kind of a message saying, not until there's a deeper sense of belonging. And it's been a calling to really seek connectedness and relatedness with other beings. And then the magic, of course, is that sense of otherness dissolves, but only when we engage. This is beautifully portrayed in the story of the Buddha's awakening. Through the night under the Bodhi tree, the Buddha sat quite still. He paused and opened to just what was there. And it was in that sacred presence that he experienced the difficulties, the joys, the sorrows, and opened to life in a transformative way. Now, by the morning, the Buddha was awakened. But Mara, the god of all the difficult energies, was still present. The process was not complete. The Buddha then reached out, and touching the earth, he called on the earth goddess, and finally Mara withdrew. In this reaching out and touching the ground, the Buddha had realized his belonging to the web of life. And it was then that he opened to full freedom. I think this image of the Buddha touching the ground is really an important message to us. That we're not struggling alone on the spiritual path, that we're not here to build spiritual muscles and defend off the adversaries of greed and hatred and delusion, that we're not here even alone trying to embrace some difficulty. Rather, like the Buddha, our path is to open to all of life, to what's described as the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, and to realize a profound sense of belonging. And it's that sense of belonging that allows us to continue to open to life. This little poem by John Suess really describes the power of experiencing our connectedness and our belonging and our wholeness. He writes, "To be of the earth is to know the restlessness of being a seed, the darkness of being planted, the struggle toward the light, the pain of growth into the light, the joy of bursting and bearing fruit, the love of being food for someone, the scattering of your seeds, the decay of the seasons, the mystery of death and the miracle of birth." As we open to the unseen parts of our being, we connect with their basic energy, with their energy of aliveness, their energy to grow and to bear fruit and to die. We connect with the violence of storms and with the beauty of sunsets. We connect with all the different parts of life that when felt allow us to discover wholeness. Now, because when we are suffering, we're feeling very small and separate, it becomes an important part of spiritual practice to learn how to reach out and touch the ground, to learn how to reach out and call on the earth goddess, or to call on some enlarged sense of being, so that we have the space to embrace difficulty, so we can feel that larger belonging. The Buddha described this reaching out, this remembering of the web, in terms of taking refuge in the Sangha. Sangha is spiritual community, spiritual friends. Sangha represents those beings that help us in realizing our relatedness. It's what Thich Nhat Hanh has described as realizing interbeing. Our partners, our children, friends, our meditation community. The healing of separation happens when there's real presence, when there's the intentional presence of others that care. Now, this isn't an abstract kind of presence. It really takes courage and practice both to offer our presence to others, and to allow another being to hold a space for us, to hold us in awareness. Let me tell you a story. In the Midwest, I don't know where, it said that there was an old couple that lived next door to a young couple who had a 4-year-old son, and the families were close. When the woman of the older couple, an 80-year-old woman, died, her husband grieved deeply. And so a few days after her death, the young boy went over to his house and sat on his lap and stayed there for hours. There was no talking. as it turns out, the town that these families lived in offered an annual award to the person that showed the most kindness. And some months later, after this incident with the young boy and the old man nominated this little boy. And his mom asked him, "What was it that you said when you went over that day?" He responded, "I didn't say anything, Mama. I just helped him to cry." So what does it mean to help somebody to cry? What's required? In my experience, it has to do with not trying to change anything, not trying to fix that person, not wanting them different, but rather creating a very safe and loving kind of atmosphere so that their natural expression can unfold. Now, it's very difficult for us to do that. We're uncomfortable with intense feelings. So until we've accepted in a very deep way our own intensity, it's hard to hold that space for others. But helping someone to cry, helping someone to be fully themselves, is an act of generosity that brings on a deep healing. Learning to hold another and learning to be held by another is one of the most precious gateways in spiritual life. Because we've all been wounded, it really takes commitment and practice. We're afraid to be held. Most of us have felt in some way betrayed or have this fear that if someone holds us, they'll find out that we're really not lovable, that they don't really want to anyway. So it's hard to trust others. And it's hard to sense that another being will entrust their vulnerability to us. So it's quite a beautiful and challenging part of the spiritual path to explore how to be close in that way. Now, sometimes we start one step removed from humans. We start with where it's safer. For many of us, there can be quite a sense of coziness and intimacy with our dogs and our cats because there's not a fear of being rejected. And so we actually allow ourselves to be nourished in those relationships. Similarly, we can sometimes really let ourselves be held by the natural world, the outdoors. I know for myself that on silent and longer retreats, I'll almost regularly hit phases of feeling sad or lonely. And I find that if I go outside and I find a tree that's particularly beckoning, and just meditate by that tree and touch it and lean on it and cry to it and be enfolded into it. And what's so wonderful is that the more I hang out in relating, the less there really is any distance, any otherness, because what happens is there's just this feeling of belonging, that there's room in the sky and the deep earth for my tears. And that gradually, as I let myself be taken care of by trees and earth, it becomes easier and easier to let the people that are in my closest circle in. But it's a practice. This is a poem by Mary Oliver. "Once only, and then in a dream, I watched while secretly and with the tenderness of any caring woman, a cow gave birth to a red calf, tongued him dry and nursed him in a warm corner of the clear night, in the fragrant grass, in the wild domains of the prairie spring. And I asked them, in my dream I knelt down and I asked them to make room for me." You might reflect on where you feel a sense of belonging. Is there a certain place in nature where the sense of being there allows you to feel held by the elements? Are there certain people where it's safe to express what's real? It soothes the edge of a sense of separate self, and there's really that experience of communing. D.H. Lawrence writes, "We must get back into relation, vivid and nourishing relation to the cosmos and the universe. The way is through daily ritual and reawakening. We must once more practice the ritual of dawn and noon and sunset, the ritual of kindling fire and pouring water, the ritual of the first breath and the last. To these rituals we must return. Vitally, the human race is dying. It is like a great uprooted tree with its roots in the air. We must plant ourselves again in the universe." When D.H. Lawrence says the human race is dying, he's talking about the same kind of suffering that the Buddha describes when he says we are caught in feeling separate. He is describing a path of reconnecting, that our vitality depends on us reconnecting with this earth and with each other. This longing to reconnect is our deepest longing, but if we stay ensnared in our daily habits of resisting, grasping, going for immediate gratification, we don't touch into that deeper longing, and we deprive ourselves of the pathways to connecting. So our path is to take the time to sense our aspiration again and again, to break the trance of our daily habit and sense what really matters this moment. What really matters? And then to reach out wakefully from the energy of that longing, to again find that we can plant ourselves in the universe. Again, this is not an abstract kind of practice. A friend of mine was about to visit his mother, who was quite angry and didn't want to see him. So he approached the visit with a lot of insecurity and contraction. And I was talking to him and asked him, "What is it that you most want? Really, what matters here?" And he said, "Well, I want to be held, to feel the embrace of someone who loves me." And he was realistic. He said, "I know I can't get it from her, but I need to feel that sense of being held to even be able to deal with this." So we did a meditation, and I invited him to imagine and bring to mind those that loved him, that he trusted. And he did so and imagined a circle of friends. And this circle was surrounding him and holding him in prayer and care. And he just meditated on the energy of the love that was coming from them and feeling himself reconnected to a sense of his universe. And then I had him imagine facing his mom, encountering her, but holding within him that sense of belonging. And he practiced some like that and felt that he could deal with the situation and went off and visited her. And just to give you a little bit of the rest of the story, she played out her drama. In other words, she really did reject him, and it was quite painful. But he felt that it was a pain that he could tolerate. And what allowed him to tolerate it was that somewhere in his awareness, he was able to remember and trust a larger belonging. This is called looking for love. "A strange passion is moving in my head. My heart has become a bird which searches in the sky. Every part of me goes in different directions. Is it really so that the one I love is everywhere?" The love we long for is everywhere. This has been described by Joanna Macy as the world is lover, the sense that the trees and the winds and the bird sounds and the light in a child's eye, the voices, the breath, that all parts of this world are the beloved, and that we really can rest in this world. And when we feel the pain of being thrown out of the garden, which I think we all do a lot of the time, and it seems that the world as lover is out there, then our practice can be to reach out, to try to connect. You can sense when it's happening to you, and just simply touch the ground in whatever way works for you to invoke or bring to mind where love is, and feel held by that love. So in this next meditation we'll do, we'll explore a bit this practice of reaching out and touching the ground. And as a way of beginning again, just to feel yourself sitting in a comfortable way. And establish an embodied presence so that you can feel the sensations of your body. You can feel the movement of your breath. Just know that you're here. Senses awake, aware of sounds and space. Aware of the current shape of your life and allowing yourself to bring to mind any place that is asking for a healing attention, where you feel a sense of difficulty. It may be a place that you wish that you could react differently, behave differently, feel differently. But sense what's difficult. Feel the energies that are challenging in the body. And feel your longing for freedom or healing around this. And it's from that place of longing, this longing to learn, this longing to wake up, that you can call on the source of love, call on the beloved in whatever way resonates for you. This is where in the journey we call on the spirit guides, the helpers. It might be a mythic sense of who the beloved is, someone you know, an old person, a young person, an energetic radiance, but just sense the presence of a being that is wise and loving. Sense this being near enough to you so that you can see their eyes. And taking a full breath, inhaling, exhaling, allow yourself to become that being so that you can look through the eyes of compassion and wisdom, so that you can hold in your heart what is experienced and behold your own small self, the one who's struggling. See what's true through these eyes of wisdom. See what's most difficult, where the suffering is. Sense that you can hold with the deepest kind of care the unfolding of this pain. Take some time in the quiet to feel that you, an awakened bodhisattva being, can hold with great compassion and clarity the unfolding of this place of pain. Aware of being the holder, the space that this life is happening in. And also sensing the places in your being that feel held, that feel seen by the beloved. So that there's a sense of merging, of becoming the holder and the held. The one who sees, the one who's seen. The Buddha described all his teachings as about suffering and the end of suffering. In these talks, we've been addressing the particular and very contemporary suffering of self-aversion, aversion towards our inner life. And what we discover is that when we push away parts of what we sense as self, we're rejecting all of life. There's a distancing from others. There's a further severing of any sense of rootedness or belonging in this universe. When instead we begin to commit and practice radical self-acceptance, we begin to embrace the deities, the difficulties, we are opening the space of heart and mind to include all beings. This is the bodhisattva path, the path of awakening, that we make room for the neediness, the fear, the anger, and that in the making room we enlarge this awareness that we may have room for all beings. We become the beloved that sees what's true and holds with love. So many of us have known this experience of having lost someone dear, grieving a lot, and being with others that have also been grieving. And the enormous kind of intimacy that happens, and sometimes it's short-lived, but during that time, there's this sense of very tender and raw presence. And it's possible because there's nothing left that we are pushing away or hiding. We've opened so fully to what's true that we become that openness. There's plenty of room for each other and plenty of compassion and caring. This is an expression of the bodhisattva's awareness. The Special Olympics end up being a source of many wonderful stories because so many of the participants have had to face a sense of deficiency and in that facing awaken this quality of heart and awareness. There's a beautiful example of this. It's a story from the 1968 Olympics, and one participant was Kim Peek, and he was a brain damaged, severely handicapped boy racing in the 50-yard dash. Now, Kim was racing against two other athletes with cerebral palsy, and they were in wheelchairs. Kim was the lone runner. As the gun sounded, Kim moved quickly ahead of the other two. 20 yards ahead and 10 yards from the finish line, he turned to see how the others were coming. The girl had turned her wheelchair around and was stuck against the wall. The other boy was pushing his wheelchair backward with his feet. Kim stopped, went back, and pushed the little girl across the finish line. The boy in the wheelchair going backward won the race. The girl took second. Kim lost. Or did he? The crowd that gave Kim a standing ovation didn't think so. This is our path, this path of learning to relate to our inner life, and in relating to our inner life, to all of life, with a genuine kind of understanding and love. It really reflects the bodhisattva's aspiration, which has been described in two parts, that the first part of that aspiration is may all circumstances serve to awaken heart and mind. The second, may these lives be of benefit. When you meditate on that first aspiration and sense in your own life, what are the circumstances that are most challenging? And sense, how might these serve to awaken? How might the places of deepest self-aversion and shame actually be the ground for waking up? When we begin to really practice radical acceptance, our lives naturally become more and more of benefit because there's more space, because there's more room. But what we find is we have to begin again and again with just what's arising. Being a bodhisattva is not another role or ideal. We start just with what's here, with today's judgments and today's fears and rage and sadness, the longing for love, the curiosity, the playfulness. And the practice is just to relate with wakefulness, with care, to how this is. Through these talks, I've spoken a lot about really seeing the suffering, that it's when we get just how painful it is to turn on ourselves that we can actually respond with compassion. Now, when we look through the eyes of the beloved, we can see this. I love the way Thomas Merton describes it. He says, life is this simple. We are living in a world that is absolutely transparent, and the divine is shining through it all the time. This is not just a nice story or a fable. This is true. So this learning to see what's here is a way of discovering the truth both of our suffering and our beauty. There's many practices in the Tibetan tradition that help to cultivate this seeing. One of them is to reflect that everyone that you encounter was once your mother. I do for myself a similar practice, and because I love the word friend, when I meet someone new or see someone I know or just a stranger from a distance, I'll mentally reflect, you are my friend. You are my friend. And it's beyond likes and dislikes. It's kind of establishing a fundamental sense of a care or a connection that really is already there. It's realizing we all want to be happy. We all want to love and be loved. And we're all afraid. So as Thomas Merton describes, we're learning to see. We're learning to see through the eyes of the beloved. And this practice of seeing is what begins to free us. Free us within to really accept what's there, to heal what's there, and free us to be there and really connect with the beings of our life. The sacred journey begins with suffering, and it's the suffering of being kicked out of the garden, of being in some way disconnected from the source. And the path of coming home is the practice of this radical self-acceptance, this practice of embracing what arises with a heart of kindness. And it's in this practice of embracing the deities, the difficulties, that we recognize and reconnect to the source. In each moment that we're able to embrace a part of our being that's been rejected, we realize more fully who we really are. That rather than being that deficient self, we come to realize our being as the awareness that's embracing. We realize that we're the awareness that's knowing and loving and holding this life. Punjaji says, before the beginning, you are pure consciousness. You are the fullness of love in love and the emptiness of awareness. You are existence and the peace beyond peace. You are the substratum on which everything moves. Let it move. You are now. You are nowness. What I is there which can be out of this now? You are truth, and only the truth is. We intuit this truth of who we really are, and as most of us find, we forget again and again and again. So the value of meditation is to keep looking and seeing what's happening. This final meditation is a way of practicing the Bodhisattva path, this path of being with and seeing what's true, both within our own being and within all beings. So as a way of beginning, again, find yourself in a position that's comfortable and relaxed and also alert. You might feel the half smile of the Buddha. It's that very real but slight smile that connects us with the spirit of kindness. You can feel the half smile at the corners of the eyes and let the flesh around the eyes relax. Let the brow be smooth. And feel the half smile moving down through the face, letting go of tension and tightness. Feeling the half smile at the throat, and loosening and relaxing in that area, so that the eyes are smiling, the mouth is smiling, the throat, and then letting that smile move down into the chest and heart, so you can visualize and feel the sense of a smile and the warmth and the opening that comes out from that. You can even sense the radiance of that smile expanding outward and filling the space around you, letting awareness open and abide in that very spacious sense, that receptivity and kindness that can hold our experience. Sensing the beloved, our essence, allow yourself to behold your inner life, looking through these eyes of care and kindness, sensing the goodness of who you are, the caring of your being, your generosity, your aliveness, your longing to live fully. Sense what is good. This divine that radiates through this transparent world. And just honor that, bowing to the sacred. And including as you behold your being the vulnerability, the sorrows, the disappointments, the waves of pain and shame that move across this ocean of being, holding these too with compassion. Sensing your prayer. What is your longing, your prayer for this life? And then bringing to mind a being who's dear to you. Bringing to mind someone who you'd like to offer your prayer to. And sensing their presence here. Imagining, feeling who they are. sensing this being's goodness, the light in their eyes, their capacity to love, their beauty, and just honoring that, honoring the sacred. Also beholding in this being their vulnerability, where they've been hurt and frightened, disappointed. Sensing the waves of pain or aversion, holding in your open heart this pain and offering your prayer. Darling, I care about your suffering. Your own words from your heart. Resting in this open and compassionate awareness so that whoever appears in consciousness, whoever in your life you become aware of, taking these moments to see their beauty, to see their vulnerability, to offer your prayer. And then opening the space of heart and mind now to include all beings. We offer the prayer of the Bodhisattva, our prayer. May these hearts and minds awaken through all circumstances. May our lives be of benefit.
This concludes Radical Self-Acceptance with Tara Brach. Music by Nawang Ketchog from the album Sounds of Peace, available through Sounds True. For more information about insight meditation workshops and speaking engagements with Tara Brach, please email her in care of the Insight Meditation Community of Washington at meditate@imcw.org. To order additional copies of this audio learning program, or to receive a free catalog of over 400 transformational audio and video tapes, please call Sounds True, 800-333-9185, or write the Sounds True catalog, P.O. Box 8010, Boulder, Colorado, 80306. You can also visit us on the World Wide Web at www.soundstrue.com. Thank you for listening.